This is Cave Scott Allen of OTCO.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com. Hello and welcome to Herding Code. This episode's being recorded mostly live on February 8th, 2012, the year of our John. Tonight we're talking with Remco Mulder. Did I get that right?
That's right, yep.
Awesome. And Jeff Schumacher.
Hello, hello.
Who I do not know in any way, shape, or form. And we're going to be talking about continuous testing and all those useless, you know, unit tests that you should just have Visual Studio generating for you anyway. And why you would want to even use one of these frameworks to, you know, constantly chew up your CPU cycles when you could be, you know, running Outlook or dealing with important mail. Rem, should we call you just Rem or Hey Buddy?
Actually, Rem is probably a hell of a lot easier. It's not even a normal name where I'm from, so yeah, I'm pretty used to that.
I'm just afraid that like whoever talks after you will get commented out, and we won't actually show up on the recording. Yes, that was a nerd joke. I'm sorry. It's an old nerd joke, so only old nerds will get it, really. So you run the Spectacular nCrunch project, correct?
That's right. Yep.
And Jeff, you've released the Unfathomable Giles project.
I have indeed.
Yes. They both kind of do the same thing. They watch your code. They watch your files. You do something. They compile. They run the tests. They tell you where you screwed up, or they throw incomprehensible exceptions because you didn't write your test right. So, Rem, how about if we start with you, and we'll talk about what was the impetus for creating this framework. Is it really just another knockoff of AutoTest or Zentest by Ruby frameworks, or is this completely, you know...
Well, I'll be completely upfront and saying that I had no idea that any tools even existed that did this sort of thing. As anyone that knows me will tell you, you know, I basically live under a rock. You know, I kind of hide in my basement and write code all day, and I don't really do much searching around for these sorts of tools. To be honest, when I started working on nCrunch, I had no idea what continuous testing even was or that it even existed. Basically, it was I was finishing off a contract at the time, one not so sunny day in London, and I was particularly frustrated at the fact that it was taking me about 2 or 3 minutes just to run the simplest test cycle in a project that I was working on. And that was sort of the inspiration that kind of led me down a path, basically born of frustration, and trying to find some way of getting these test times down. And somewhere along that way, I got distracted when I realized that there was a hell of a lot more I could do. The original objective is something I guess I've referred back to occasionally, but there are all sorts of interesting things that start to become quite obvious that you can do when you begin looking at cutting down test times. Obviously, when you have a test runner, you can start thinking about running tests far more often. When you're running tests far more often, you can start thinking about getting more information out of those tests, and it just kind of snowballs from there. So I guess it's been sort of several years now in development before it's actually gotten to the stage where, you know, I've been very happy to make the thing public and see what people can do with it. But yeah, I would say, you know, and to come back to your original question, really it was a tool born of ignorance and frustration.
So Jeff, what drove you to write Giles?
A lot of the same reasons that Rem had mentioned. It was really, actually started a year ago when we were taking the train ride down to Agile Open Northwest down in Portland from Seattle. I mean, at the time, the project that we were working on, we were using the MBUnit Galio test framework with TD.NET is the test runner. And I found that my Galio just happens to be really, really slow for whatever reason. It's, you know, and I built up this whole test suite or sample project that's out there on GitHub to kind of compare the runtimes for just a very, very simple test of all the frameworks, all the test frameworks out there, and found that Galio was actually the slowest one. So that started getting me thinking as to, okay, you know, I keep sitting here waiting for these simple tests to pass, and my mind is getting distracted. I can't focus on the problem that I'm trying to solve. I just want to write the test. I want to write the implementation. I want to go back and write another test. I want to refactor. I don't want to have to think about the test being run. So I started looking around for solutions out there, and I kind of heard about autotest.net a while ago and checked out the state of that and found some old links and things and said, well, you know, this doesn't seem to be maintained anymore. Lo and behold, it actually was. It was just in a different spot. So I said, well, you know, this really shouldn't be that hard, and I really don't want something in Visual Studio. I want it kind of in the command line, and I want the growl notification things, you know, kind of a toast on my screen. So I just said, well, you know, we're sitting here on the train riding us down to Portland. Let's start something up and see what we can do. And it just kind of grew from there. It's been steadily growing some interest around. I've got some people contributing to it. It isn't by nowhere near as polished as EndCrunch, which is a beautiful product. But it really just it grew out of a frustration of having to try to keep my mind on track, you know, as to getting things to run as fast as possible as far as running tests.
So what kind of frameworks do each of you support? I mean, I'm probably in Unit to start with. Of course, everyone supports in Unit. Are there any test frameworks that you want support for that you don't have or that you, you know, don't know? Well, can't. Are there any test frameworks you don't know about? Tell me.
best question ever.
Can you tell me the unknown knowables?
I'm sure that Jeff can very much relate to my own experience in this area, that really there are far too many testing frameworks in existence in the .NET space. Way too many. I mean, if you think about what a test framework actually does, you know, basically it gives you an entry point into code where you can write a test. And obviously there's many ways in which you can describe that test. And I think that's sort of why we have so many testing frameworks. But as a tool developer, it's a constant point of frustration where everyone seems to have their own framework that they prefer to use. And somehow you need to support as many as you can. So with EndCrunch, I kind of went down the road originally of just starting with EndUnit because it was the one that I understood the best. But on implementing EndUnit, I then realized that a lot of people wanted MS Test as well. So then I implemented MS Test. And then... it sort of kept on growing, and then it was XUnit, and then it was MBUnit, and somewhere MSpec appeared along the way as well. So I guess so far, EndCrunch supports what I would consider to be the major frameworks. There are other ones that are out there. InSpec, for one, is something that I've sort of been looking towards as well. But yeah, it is certainly a point of frustration I think that Jeff can relate to.
So I kind of started out with the MSpec side of things because I was a big fan at the time of MSpec, not NSpec, so the machine specifications framework, and found that was really actually easy to write a test runner for by the way that they designed the API, and it allowed me to get up and running really, really quick. And then after that, I thought, well, you know, a lot of people still use EndUnit. I love EndUnit too, and EndUnit's a really, really fast framework, just like MSpec is, so I'll go ahead and support that one. And then somebody came along a couple months later and said, hey, are you going to have support for MS Test? And I said to them, I accept pull request. I'm not going to write that. Not to be rude about it, but I'm just, at that point in time, I was feeling very, very strongly against using MS Test because of my history of using it and having a lot of problems with it, it giving wrong results for tests. So I decided I was just going to stay away from MS Test completely, and Giles to this day does not have support for MS Test. And then I got a couple other guys come in to build up support for other things. Scott Kuhn, you built up support for XUnit.net, which was great, and I use that all the time with Giles now. And NSpec, one of the newer frameworks, just works out of the box because their base runner or the base framework that they use is NUnit under the hood.
So, Jeff, you opted out on MS Test. Rem, you built in support for MS Test. Was it difficult to do?
Oh.
Can you talk about that? I mean, what?
Is it still too soon to talk about?
I'm trying not to relive the memories too much. It was a considerably long length of time with many late nights and an enormous amount of pain. Basically, you know, with credit to the guys at Microsoft, because they, you know, I have no idea under what circumstances MS Test was written, and I think they really had to make this thing work. But it is not an easy framework to integrate with. And, you know, if you think about a lot of the features that really make EndCrunch useful, you know, its code coverage and performance analysis and so forth, you know, trying to get those features into a test framework means you need to have a lot of hook points, and there's a lot of interesting stuff that you need to do. And MS Test was just resisting me all the way. Out of all the frameworks that I worked with, by far, it was the hardest. And I'm sure there are still some things that I might need to go back and revisit, but I keep putting them off because, to be honest, I'm too young to die.
You know, just in passing, but it seems like you were mentioning there's so many testing frameworks, and it almost seems like there should be something like Owen or something that's a spec for testing frameworks. Maybe there is. I don't know.
So actually, when I was implementing the XUnit stuff in Giles, I did a lot of research in their test runner and whatnot, and I found out that Brad Wilson and Jim Newkirk, the authors of XUnit, have made a decision that their test runner interface is basically done. That's always going to be backwards compatible. So if going forward you want to write a test runner that works with XUnit, you just have to worry about that interface, and it should survive from version to version. Now, whether that's always going to be true, and they may run into some situation where they say, hey, we got to change this because of, you know, new thing X or new thing Y. But I thought that was an interesting kind of way to approach it and say, you know, we might futz around with new attributes, we might futz around with, you know, the code underneath, but if you want to run a test runner, this is the only interface you got to worry about. Don't worry about anything else. Don't do anything crazy. Just do this. And that kind of made me think along the same lines, why don't we have, you know, could we come up with a kind of standard for test frameworks? And would that be able to get any kind of pull? I don't know.
Yeah, I think, you know, an approach like that is really to be applauded. And, you know, obviously it's very much a learned approach because, you know, the act of writing a test framework really in itself starts with writing a specification. You know, you are specifying to people how these tests will be written, how will they be run. And if you look at, you know, the approaches of other frameworks, at least initially, you know, it has been very much on the idea of we set the standard, you know, we write a tool that starts running your tests. And if this, you know, if this approach needs, this framework needs to be integrated with Visual Studio or with any other tool, then whoever writes the tool that does that is going to have to deal with that standard themselves. And, you know, that's a very limiting approach because it puts all the burden on tool developers. And it actually gets away, I think, from what test frameworks are trying to achieve, which is trying to solve the problem of running tests effectively. So by having an API that effectively takes responsibility for that, you're saying, let me take care of running the tests and how the test expresses itself. And then you, the tool developer, can take responsibility for just calling me and getting the results and making it meaningful to people, which I think is a much more efficient way of doing it. And I wish that everyone had done that from the start.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. When I was coming from the point of view of writing MSpec first, support for Giles, and then, you know, having a couple other test frameworks come in and having support for those, and then going back and updating MSpec and then to the latest version, and then trying to go run other projects that were using an older version of MSpec, things just broke right away because the API within MSpec expects, you know, specific versions of things. They didn't write it the way that the XUnit guys did. So the way that I actually got around that, and Giles actually has the capability now to run any version of MSpec tests that you want, as long as they don't change the calling API, that I'm using this open source library called Impromptu Interface, where basically I use Dynamics with Reflection to pull stuff out of the MSpec library that is sitting there with the actual test assemblies for your project. And I kind of dynamically pass things in so I can have an interface that I can actually run tests against in Giles without really caring about what machine spec version you're running. And it just so happens that NUnit and XUnit don't have this problem at all, just the way that the APIs are designed. But machine specifications did have that issue, and Impromptu Interface was a great thing to say, okay, we have Dynamics in .NET 4, you know, we'll just create a dynamic and we'll say, make this dynamic look like this other interface that I'm pulling out with Reflection. And I was able to actually really easily get away from the versioning hell that came with supporting machine specs.
So we've talked kind of more in depth about the support and frameworks that you guys handle. But one thing I thought was interesting is you both solve, as Scott said, you solve similar things, but the approach is a lot different. So I wondered if you guys could describe kind of, you know, I'm new to your framework or to your testing tool. I install it, and what do I see, and what does it look like? I don't know. Do you want to start, Rem?
Sure. So, well, I guess, yeah, the focus really is on what do you want to get out of the tool. And, you know, the one way you can look at a continuous testing tool is basically looking at a tool that continuously runs tests, which, you know, obviously in its very small context is quite a useful thing because it can give you fast results. You know, you can basically know whether a test is passing or failing very early. But the other thing you can do is look a little bit beyond that and say, what sort of opportunities does a continuous testing tool actually open up in the area of analysis? Because continuous testing in itself is actually something that's probably been around for quite some time, and you can actually implement it manually if you choose to. You know, just stop and run your tests 5 times a minute or something. It's kind of slow and it's a bit annoying, but you can actually do it. The thing that I found quite useful with continuous testing was that it allowed me to actually learn more about a code base than you could actually see just by statically analyzing it or, you know, by looking at the code as it was typed. I mean, really what tests allow you to do is get under the hood of a code base and see how a piece of code is executed. So when you start to get down that road, it opens up all sorts of interesting opportunities around, you know, code coverage analysis, performance analysis. You know, you could do analysis of memory management, all sorts of things. And, you know, to me, that is very much what nCrunch is about. tests are really a means of facilitating that. And obviously your experience with the test run will be based on the quality of the tests that you write. But, you know, you shouldn't be looking at your tests as just being a pass-fail result. You know, you should be looking at them as what can this test tell me about my code?
Okay, so my experience so far in the one project I've used it on was that I've got a Visual Studio window or, you know, tool, I don't know what they call it, a little Visual Studio doc thing, and it showed, you know, check marks, and it showed green, and then I break something, and it messes it up, or, you know, then it shows that the test failed, and it also has these kind of black and green circles, kind of like you'd see a breakpoint, and they show whether or not something's covered by code. That's kind of my, you know, dumb guy just taking a quick look at it. Is that kind of representative, do you think, of, you know, what you'd think a person's first experience would be?
Yeah, I mean, it's the thing about a tool like nCrunch, because it does so much, you know, it's very hard to really kind of condense everything that it does for you, you know, within a screenshot or a short video. And, you know, what the experience that you've described is something that I've tried to really paint, because I think it's the most in-your-face kind of immersive way you can actually get to know the tool. You know, basically, this is a tool that shows you code coverage while you're typing your code, and it shows your exceptions in line. And a lot of people, to be honest, actually pick up nCrunch having seen that, and they use it for only that feature, and they're very happy with it. You know, I try to encourage people to take the extra step and sort of read through the quick start guide and sort of look at a little bit deeper into what the tool can offer them. Because I think, you know, particularly around the areas of parallel execution, you know, and the performance analysis, there's a lot more that you can take away. You know, a lot of the projects that I've worked on, you know, they haven't so much suffered from a lot of the early problems that, you know, we had with the testing community, you know, of not having enough tests, but rather they had too many tests. So you could get projects, you know, with a testing time of 1 hour plus from end to end. And that basically means that if you make a single change to your code base in some deep down area, you have to wait a full hour before you know whether your code actually works or not. So when you actually start getting into, you know, the nitty-gritty of what nCrunch can do for you, you know, and running things in parallel and, you know, with the impact analysis and so forth, you can really cut that hour down to a much shorter space of time. And I think that's a feature that a lot of people really overlook. But yeah, I mean, to come back to your original question, definitely that's how nCrunch is painted. And to be honest, I wouldn't want to change that. I think it's a nice, obvious way, you know, it brings things in line, it shows you what's going on, and that's a very nice thing to have.
In a language like C# or even Vim, you're still kind of limited by the fact that you still have to go through a compile and, you know, link step and all that. So you're really at that point, your ability to run tests fast is limited by your compiler, which is a strange situation to kind of be in. Whereas languages like Python and Ruby, you know, they're able to run things very fast because they just, you know, you're usually dealing with a very small piece of code or small, you know, file. You don't have to compile together everything and create all the V tables and blah, 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 and all that. You just interpret and go. So their feedback tends to be fast. Have you guys done any kind of optimizations to try to shortcut the compiler process? Or, you know, I've thought about, you know, once we get to, you know, .NET 5 and the, Rosetta project, the compiler as a service, maybe you'll be able to just kind of run things, you know, in that process versus having to go through the entire compile an assembly creation step. Roslyn, that's what it was. What Rosetta was Apple's thing for translating 32 to 64. Duh. Okay. So I didn't know if you guys have run into that issue where you get to, you know, a certain size of project or certain complexity, and suddenly, you know, you're still waiting for your continuous tester to run because it's got to do all this junk.
Yeah, well, I mean, as you say, there's always the case that you have to actually build an application that you can run your tests against before you can run your tests. And this is sort of all, you know, part and parcel of the problem of having a change to the code base come in and somehow that code needing to translate into something the machine can understand and run in an environment that's consistent with what your tests would expect. But really, you know, the problem is at a much higher level than a lot of people think it is. The problem itself is not actually the compiler, it's the build process. Because a lot of people build a lot of assumptions into their projects. You know, they might have like a a code contracts build step or something that checks certain interfaces in their assembly to see whether they comply and does a whole lot of manipulation of an output assembly. And that's something that actually needs to be considered with a tool like nCrunch, because if you don't consider it, you know, the code may not run in the way that the user expects it to. So although the compiler is very much, you know, the meat in the sandwich, and it's the most interesting part of what makes the build process tick, it's not the only cog in there. And, you know, there's a lot of things that people do in their build processes that you wouldn't expect. I've spent the last year and a bit learning about them. It's quite crazy.
Yeah, I'm coming from the kind of the point of view of the way that I want Giles to work is that there are a lot of, and like Rem said, there are a lot of crazy things that people can do in their build processes. You know, the pre-build steps, post-build steps, or just to name a couple of them. You can do all kinds of crazy file copying stuff, whether you've got to copy like out like a SQLite DLL for in-memory database testing or whatever it is. So, you know, with Giles, I took the approach of, I really want this to be a very, very lean tool to get out of your way to give you, as quick a feedback as we can without going into a lot of the complexity of the compiler and the build process. And frankly, I guess it's just me. I'm really not too interested in going and trying to solve those sorts of problems. I think Giles serves the area really well to where you have projects that are highly modularized and MS Build is able to figure out, okay, well, we'd only need to build these other two, you know, these two projects have changed, but the other five that are in your solution, they haven't changed. And my experience so far has been that even with sizable projects, that, you know, 600-700 tests, Giles is actually able to run that pretty quick. It's not really up there as far as test runtime with a product like TDNet, where they've done a lot of optimization about making it, you know, one of the fastest test runners out there. But I think Giles suits it really well and when you get into the bigger project space where you're talking about tests that could take hours to run, Giles just isn't going to be a good fit for that.
I have found, though, that just for, and these are smaller projects, but I was amazed how fast things ran. Like, as I'm typing with nCrunch, it's immediately giving me feedback as I type without even having to save. And what I saw with Giles was the second that I saved, I mean, it was very, very quick. I didn't know if you were doing any kind of like optimizations around that to do, you know, what would you call it? To compile only what I changed. I don't know, but it was really, really fast. And like you're both saying, the immediate feedback cycle was huge. I mean, it made it so that I didn't have to, okay, I'll write some code. Now I'll run a test. Now I'll do this. It was just, as I typed, it immediately showed me what I needed to do next.
Well, I think a lot of that's going to be due to the compiler and the way that it chooses what to build and what not to build. So if you've got four or five projects that all compile, you know, one-to-one to assemblies within your project, and you have dependencies between them, if that, you know, assembly is already built and there's been no changes, I don't think that MS Build will rebuild it unless you force a clean build or something. You guys can correct me if I'm wrong there, but like it may have to relink to dependencies, but it doesn't have to recompile everything, just the parts that have changed within an assembly, I think.
It's sadly a little bit more complicated than that. MS Build does have a number of optimizations into it, but the compile step is still, you know, fairly atomic, and, you know, it will compile basically if there is a change in there. I think where a lot of the limitations with a conventional build are more around the way that dependencies are managed across the build process. So, you know, if you've got a package or a project that's sitting right down the bottom of your dependency tree, and you then happen to make a change to that project, the logical thing to do is not only build that project, but every project all the way up your tree, because everything has been written, you know, all tests and everything have been written with the assumption that those particular output assemblies will be in the same directory as the output file. You know, so the build process basically has to run. And even if it can shortcut certain parts of that process, you know, like the compile step, because the output is still the same, you still have a hell of a lot of work that needs to happen there. So there are opportunities that you can take, you know, as a continuous test runner to reduce the length of that. But something a lot of people also really overlook is the sheer effect you can have by running tests or triggering the build automatically. I mean, this is sort of the difference between actual build time and perceived build time. You know, what people are used to is they write code, and then when they're done with their code, they'll go and they take their mouse and they click their rebuild button. And that whole process of actually picking up the mouse, clicking the rebuild button, that's actually a few seconds there. So if you have a tool that takes that away and does it for you, you know, you actually get a massive improvement in the perceived speed of your build process simply by taking the user out of the equation.
So when you have tests that may not be appropriate to run every time, so for example, you have some tests that you may want to quote unquote slow tests that, you know, hit a file system or a database. Is there a way of partitioning those off with the tools? Say, you know, I don't want to run these as part of my continuous test cycle, even though I may want to run them manually.
So with Giles, there's a couple of ways you can do it. Giles allows you to have multiple test assemblies that you can pass in and configure through the kind of the console window is an interactive interface for Giles, you know, as opposed to being built into Visual Studio as nCrunch is. So you can kind of turn on and off test assemblies that you want to run. And there's also the idea of being able to filter out by namespaces and classes within Giles. That support I'm not completely finished with. It's something I'm kind of working on. But yeah, for that exact reason, you know, if you're working on a piece of code and it's going to affect other things in the system, and you only want to be concerned with, I'm running a test for this one particular service in the system, and I only want to run those things which are within that namespace. And I know it's going to break other things in the system, but I don't want all that noise right now. So I'm just going to filter out to that namespace, and then I can hyper-focus on exactly the problem that I'm trying to solve rather than worrying about what's going on with everything else in the system. Because, you know, all in all, you have to run all the tests before you commit it, and your build process should be running all the tests anyways. So, you know, being able to just filter down doesn't eliminate the reality that you have tests. You should have tests covering everything else, but it does allow you to really hone in on the component that is most important to you at that time.
Yeah, I mean, I very much agree with Jeff in the idea that, you know, you really want to make sure that you're running all of your tests before you check in. There are tools, continuous testing tools out there that basically will work very hard on impact detection and only running the tests that have been impacted by a particular change. But the problem with that approach is that no impact detection is ever perfect. You know, you may very well have the impact detection working to the stage where, you know every test that's touching a particular change point and you can safely run just those tests, but it doesn't account for external dependencies outside the testing environment. You know, what if something changed in a database or some SQL file that's not part of the solution that happens to exist on the disk somewhere? You know, there's a whole range of things that can cause tests to fail that a test runner may just not be aware of at all. So the approach that I kind of took with nCrunch was to use the impact detection as a way of prioritizing the sequence within which tests should be run, so that you can be fairly sure that if you make a change, then the most relevant tests will be run first, but then the rest of them will still get run in their own time, you know, in the background behind the scenes. And assuming nCrunch is doing its job right, you shouldn't really notice any interruption or loss of performance from those tests because they'll all be using background cores, assuming you have a multi-core processor. So I think that there's a lot of room certainly for, you know, using that information on impact the test to try and reduce the amount of work that's going on. But you do need to be very careful about how much you want to cut down the amount of testing that you're doing because it has some unexpected risks occasionally.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. As you're saying, you know, you want to be able to check before you check in, run your tests, obviously. And it's interesting the kind of like progression we've made. So I was thinking back, you know, we had like before, long ago, QA was thought of, you know, testing was a separate step. And it was like we'd do a bunch of work and then we'd chuck it over to QA and they'd, you know, we had this month or, you know, week long testing cycle going back and forth. And then there's, and I'm probably missing some steps, but there's, you know, continuous integration with the build system where it's when I check in, then the build happens and hopefully some, you know, I get some test notification. And then later it's kind of better to do some kind of developer testing where they manually run the test runner. And now with continuous testing, as you're saying, number one, the tests are run and I can immediately see impact and see what I've done wrong. But I can also see things like test coverage and other things. I'm just wondering, is this as good as it gets? And this kind of overlaps a question we had from Kelly Summers. She was wondering, you know, where do you see continuous testing going in the future? Is this kind of the limit? I mean, continuous seems about as rapid of feedback as you can get.
I'm not exactly too sure where I see testing going in the future. Continuous testing seems to be picking up a little bit of traction in the .NET community, and it's talking with some guys at Agile Open Northwest earlier today who do continuous testing, but it's all in Ruby, and it's kind of a normal thing for them to do. As far as .NET is concerned, I'm really not too sure because it all goes back to we've got to wait for that because it's a compiled language. We've got to wait for that compiler and the build steps all to finish. You know, there it kind of distracts from the goal that I had for Giles, which was to minimize my distractions on my mental processes to actually solve the problem and not worry about the test. Well, I'm still waiting for something to build. It takes certainly a discipline to do continuous testing, to where if you're just doing standard TDD, you've got something like TD.NET in there. You write the test, you run it, it fails, you go implement it, you see it pass, you go and refactor, make sure it still passes. You know, that's kind of your cycle there. What I found really with continuous testing is that I have to get out of the mindset of, I know that test is going to fail before I implement it. And, you know, with the toast notification or a sound notification, I kind of have that peripheral knowledge of, okay, I know it failed, but I'm implementing it right now. That's fine. I don't have to wait for that. I can just continue working and then come back around and have the test pass. And I'm already, you know, to the next step of where I'm trying to solve the problem. So, and I'm not too sure that that's really going to be for everybody, because there are some people who are telling me today, we had a session at Agile Up Northwest about continuous testing. One guy told me that compile time, that's when I collect my thoughts about what I'm going to do next. And for some people, I can totally see that. For me, it's a distraction time. I'm thinking, you know, 10 seconds I'm waiting for the test to finish running. Instead of going and writing more of the implementation or more test, I'm thinking, oh, I wonder what's happening on Twitter. You know, I'll go check Facebook real quick. It's complete distraction. So for me, it's really trying to get my mind to just focus on the problem from start to finish.
Maybe that guy should go back and start programming in C++. He'll have plenty of time between compile, you know, runs.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting when you look at where we are going with a lot of this test automation. I mean, I'm a bit of a sort of career contractor myself, and over the last 10 years, you know, I've sort of been watching the .NET space as it's evolved. And literally, you know, 6-7 years ago, no one really was talking about automated testing, at least not in the spaces that I was working in. You know, if you knew about it, that was exceptional. If you practiced it, that was basically unheard of. And yet now, you know, I find it very hard to actually meet people that don't do automated testing to some, you know, certain extent. So, you know, I think this is a very positive development. But, you know, what we're starting to see a lot of now is that people are writing tests, which is good, but they're not writing good tests, which is bad. So, you know, these tests, they're slow or they're clumsy. You know, maybe they have side effects. So, you know, I think that continuous testing, at least as a practice, will help to evolve the way that a lot of these tests are being written. But where I really see the problem moving in the long term is that a lot of people are going to start moving away from the idea of just trying to find different ways of specifying tests and instead start thinking more about how they can find edge cases to test for. I mean, tests themselves are a very effective way of seeing whether a particular piece of code works, but they're not a very effective way of actually thinking laterally around that code and picking up all of the edge cases and little scenarios, you know, that you might not have considered when you started getting in. Obviously, you know, the process of writing the test slows you down, so you have more time to think about these things. But, you know, when you look at systems that have a higher level of automated testing, you know, this is where a lot of the defects start to come from. You know, they're these particular situations where someone uses that old version of Netscape on that website you're developing, and you hadn't considered that version. You know, what happens? No one tested for that.
Something that I was reminded of that somebody from the Nordstrom Innovation Labs has said at the conference earlier today was that he kind of sees that continuous testing is the new red squiggly. You know, you get the red squiggly in Visual Studio that tells you, you know, something's wrong, you haven't done something right. That continuous testing, especially with the tool like nCrunch, is kind of like the next evolution of that red squiggly of, okay, now that I know the compiler's satisfied, I know that my logic is kind of wrong. And that's, not being a real big fan of Visual Studio itself, I kind of like to work in Vim and command line tools as much as I can, but I can really see the benefit and value that people would get out of having that visual notification of, okay, you know, it's like a, maybe you'd call it a yellow squiggly for a test. I don't know what it would be, but it's, you know, you've got your compiler satisfied, but are your tests satisfied? Maybe that's the direction that it's going to go. I'm not too sure.
Yeah, I think that, you know, what people are going to start doing is looking a little bit more at what their tests can give them beyond just a pass-fail status. You know, what is this test doing? What is it interacting with? And what is it telling me? Is it running fast? Is it running slow? You know, where is it going? And these are all sorts of interesting things that start to come out when you actually look at a lot of the runtime analysis features that, you know, continuous testing tools can give you.
So from what I saw about the products, they're really focused on testing just the C# code. And I'm wondering if you guys have given any thought to integrating more pieces into the runner. So if I've got some JavaScript code for my website and I want to run, you know, unit tests for that, is that something that the tools can do, or is it something you've given thought to?
So I've given a lot of thought to this in Giles, in that I want to, my initial support was for C#, and I want to support F#. I don't really care about supporting VB.NET all that much. There is certainly an area for that, and other tools do that, and that's great. That's just not where my interests lie, but I do have actually a whole lot of interest in being able to run JavaScript tests and, you know, being able to fire up, whether it be integration with something like Zombie.js for kind of headless testing, or integrating with Node. I'm really not too sure. I kind of got a couple of ideas floating around in my head about that. But I want to kind of focus on, okay, if you're right, the modern kind of .NET app has a C# backend, a JavaScript frontend. Those are really kind of the important parts. You know, people are trying to figure out, well, how do I run JavaScript tests in our build? And there's also, it could be a lot of value to how do we run continuous testing on our C# code and the JavaScript code at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of room to evolve this into different languages. And certainly, you know, continuous testing is very well rooted at the moment in the Ruby space. You know, they have this fairly well sussed. Something like JavaScript would probably be quite a piece of low-hanging fruit, I guess, because, you know, it is by its nature a fairly dynamic language anyway, so you can probably take a lot of shortcuts there through your build process. But, you know, again, the whole issue with a lot of these continuous testing tools is really trying to get them to support so many platforms, and all you have to do is jump into one new language, and it's just a whole new learning curve as to, you know, find all the various different frameworks that people have implemented that by chance won't work with your particular tool. So I think that, you know, there is certainly a lot of room to further develop that, but at the moment I don't see nCrunch really moving into any spaces beyond .NET, at least certainly not this year. There's just too many other interesting pieces of fruit to get my teeth into. I think there's so much more that we can learn from our code, you know, with this runtime analysis. And if I'm then solving the same problem in different languages, you know, it's not as much of an innovation. To me, it's to be honest, it's far less interesting to me.
You could always go the insane Paul Betts route and just embed Chrome, the Chrome V8 engine, into your test runner, too, to run JavaScript.
Hey, while you're at it, just embed the entire Chrome engine. Then you can fix my CSS and, you know...
Exactly.
So we were talking about, a couple of guys were talking about this earlier at the conference again, in this continuous testing session, that the idea was brought up, can you or would it be valuable to run continuous testing for, or things like Cucumber, Selenium? Is there any value to that? And really, I think what we came out of that with was that the UI is such a different piece, a different type of creation that you're doing, that continuous testing probably doesn't have as much value there. That's not to say that it doesn't, and somebody could certainly prove me wrong. And when I think about adding support for things like JavaScript and Giles, I'm really thinking about the, you know, okay, we're doing some DOM manipulation stuff, so maybe Zombie's going to be in there or whatever it is, and or maybe we're testing stuff that's has to do with Backbone or you know, one of the other kind of MVC style frameworks for JavaScript or whatever it is, but. I think really my interest wouldn't lie in trying to automate things that are going to go and simulate clicking on a button for you, or, you know, making sure that things visually move around on the page correctly. It's more of kind of the logic that's built in around JavaScript.
So that's a good point, especially about the Selenium, because, as you know, anyone who's done web development knows, as soon as your JavaScript has to touch the DOM or do anything to the DOM, that's your slowest part. That's always going to be the slowest part. And so, you know, trying to run a Selenium test in a continuous manner would just mean that you would have a large queue of Selenium tests. But Salesforce.com actually has the Selenium, what would we call it? The Selenium testing cluster. I don't know the exact name of it. But they're able to, for their continuous integration server, they're able to constantly run the Selenium test by distributing the tests over their very large Selenium cluster. So I think that would be a little bit of overkill for, you know, your little rinky-dink internal app. You certainly wouldn't want to set up a Selenium cluster just to be able to continuously run your tests. But I think that the more and more that we get invested in JavaScript frameworks like Backbone and Knockout, and we use templating like Mustache and things like that, where we're the stuff that we really care about testing is more abstracted away from the DOM. I think that being able to do continuous testing is going to be very valuable in those cases. And I think it will be tons easier. We just have to convince certain tool vendors that they should expose JavaScript engines via an automation API within their tools, I think. So there's the big difference between Giles and nCrunch, of course, is the fact that Rem went through and suffered the pain of, you know, working with the Visual Studio Extension API to actually, you know, put in the little green dots and little red dots and squiggles and everything else. What was that like? And have you thought about also releasing, you know, just a pure kind of output window or console kind of runner for it?
Well, Visual Studio integration, it really is one of your nightmares as a developer. You know, I give full credit to the Visual Studio team. Like, considering how long this product has been around and how much it's been through, it's amazing how well it works. You know, I can't even begin to imagine how much effort has gone into keeping this thing running. But there are so many different APIs inside Visual Studio that it can be quite hard to actually figure out which one you need to integrate with. And I very quickly learned that the best way of making things work in Visual Studio was far more along the lines of any which way you possibly can, because odds are if you've found a way, then it's probably the only way, and trying to look for another way will probably cost you a lot of time. But no, at this stage, I haven't really considered taking everything out of Visual Studio. Certainly the engine would support that if I wanted to take it in that direction. But, you know, I still see the main value as being that short feedback cycle that brings everything in line. And I guess in order to really get that out of Visual Studio, I'd probably need to find a different IDE to plug that into. And considering the way that most developers use IDEs, you know, everyone kind of uses Visual Studio anyway, so there isn't really enough volume there behind me to warrant the effort to do it.
Have either of you looked at mono compatibility?
So yeah, I actually have, and that's something I've got a branch sitting out that I'm playing with for Giles to support mono. And I think that that's kind of a small niche of developers that Giles can help out as far as continuous testing goes. You know, like I said before, Visual Studio integration is a bold, huge task, and it's way beyond me. I would never be able to accomplish something like that. Full credit to Urim for doing that. So mono support actually turns out to be really, really easy to do. You just got to kind of switch what you're using. You know, you can't run MS Build, you got to run X Build, and there's a couple other idiosyncrasies of actually supporting mono, but actually turns out to be kind of a simple thing to do from a command line runner's sort of style like Giles is.
You mentioned Roslyn earlier, and I do know that is a focus, is like compiler as a service, so that doing this kind of work is not so hellacious. And I just saw an internal presentation on that with Dustin Campbell at Tech Ready, and he was doing some mind-blowing stuff, and it was not the DTE hell that any of us that have played with Visual Studio Automation have had to deal with. So that was encouraging to me to see that.
So the Roslyn supports this is something I've been also playing with. And my interest around looking into Roslyn was that I was building in this filters support for Giles, where I wanted to be able to filter by namespace or by types. And I don't really feel like going and building a parser to parse all your C# files to kind of pull out everything. That just sounds like a lot of pain to me. So there's a couple other frameworks out there, like the stuff that is used in MonoDevelop. Kind of hard to work with as far as parsing out pieces of that. But actually, Roslyn is really, really nice in that you can say, here's a bit of C#. Give me all the types and things that are out of it. And it turns out to be really, really easy to query. The only problem that I have with doing that is if I go and support Roslyn, I'm sure that I'm going to break my plans to be able to support guys running mono.
Actually, I was saying that mono already has Roslyn built in.
Sweet.
It's just not exactly the same API. They're waiting for the Roslyn guys to finally release it so they can probably match
that's
up right. One-to-one on the interface.
That's right. They do have that compiler as a service at least about a year ago or so.
Or maybe even earlier.
That's right. Oh,
2008
never
mind. Is when I saw the demo at PDC where they were showing eval in mono.
Oh, never mind then. I guess go steam forward.
And so once again, the mono team is way ahead of whatever we thought.
Yeah,
they've already implemented continuous testing, I'm sure.
I played with it a bit, and it was you know, I mean, it took a little bit of looking around for documentation, but it was pretty cool. I could compile and you know, pull in dynamics and do all kinds of crazy stuff. So.
So does NCover have to do a lot of work with the profiling API or some sort of instrumentation framework?
Well, at the moment, no, it doesn't really use the profiling API. And there are a number of reasons why I didn't go down that road, mostly because of compatibility with other tools that that already use it. But at the moment, nCrunch does most of its manipulation just statically with assemblies. So it doesn't do a hell of a lot at runtime. The runtime environment tends to be quite sacred. You know, a lot of people are very particular about the way in which their tests are run. Mm-hmm. And obviously, the profiling API, if you implement it correctly, you know, you can do things in such a way that won't affect the way that people's tests get run. But yeah, it wasn't a road that I chose to go down. There are a lot of different ways in which you can instrument things. nCrunch just happens to use one of them, and I've been looking at other ones, just trying to find the one that happens to be fastest.
So I'm wondering, and maybe you mentioned this earlier and it was over my head, but I'm wondering if, you know, you've got all this kind of immediate feedback on testing, and if it's possible to aggregate that and to apply a more advanced intelligence. Rem, you were talking a little bit about this, but, you know, like doing some kind of preemptive things and saying, you know, almost not to get into clippy territory, but, you know, like if I'm working my way down a pattern that's got a bigger difficulty, or, you know, like predictive, or, and I was wondering too about even like if there was a way to, like, you know, put statistics up or something where there's almost kind of like a shared service where you can share information. I mean, is that going way too far, or is
that... Well, it's funny you should mention, you know, did I not tell you guys the next version of nCrunch actually has a little clipboard icon that sits in the corner and then yells at you when you're writing your tests wrong? Thought it'd be a real hit. No, but in all seriousness, there is a lot your tests can tell you, and there's a lot that nCrunch collects. And I have been trying to think of ways in which nCrunch can be a little bit more intelligent with what it tells you about your tests, particularly, you know, picking up stupid mistakes and so forth. The problem is that once you start to get into this territory, it really takes a hell of a lot of actual real-world testing to get it right. You know, there's nothing worse than having a clippy that sits there saying, I see you're writing a unit test. Would you like me to add your assertions for you, you know, at all the most inconvenient times? And, you know, it's something that you need to get into with a lot of care, I suppose. So I don't see it as being something that I intend on tackling anytime soon, but certainly there's a lot of room for opportunity there.
So something that's been interesting to me, and I really haven't tried this out too much, it's because most of my work around using Giles and kind of dogfooding that has been on side projects and kind of working by myself. But and Rem, you may be able to offer some insight into this, but it seems like there would be some pros and cons as to introducing continuous testing in a pairing environment. And that, I don't know, I guess if you're doing ping-ponging where one guy writes a test and their guy implements the test, I can see the benefit there is to, you know, and been in those situations before where, okay, the other guy wrote the test, but he didn't run it, and I've went ahead and jumped in and started implementing it, but his test didn't fail for the wrong reason. Continuous testing kind of takes that issue out of the pair programming paradigm of, okay, your tests are always being run. He saved the file, you know, and then there's some other useful things you can do there, like maybe auto-saving your file every, you know, kind of frequently and getting those tests to run maybe a little bit faster. Not really too sure of that, but, you know, I would like to be able to test that out a little bit more in pair programming scenarios to see where it goes. I think there could be a lot of benefits there.
Yeah, I think when you look at something like pair programming, particularly the old ping-pong approach of you write the test, I implement it, I write the next test, you know, a lot of these sorts of approaches have really been built around that artificial pause that has been constructed by the need to stop and build and run your test. So I think it would be quite interesting to see just what would happen when you take that pause out. I mean, most of the situations where I was testing nCrunch hands-on with members of my team, you know, we found that fairly naturally, you know, people would tend to want to pick up the keyboard when they felt they had something to share, which I think in a balanced pairing environment would kind of happen anyway. But yeah, I guess it then sort of falls back onto you whether you really want to kind of push in any sort of structure into your pairing session or whether you'd prefer to just let it evolve naturally.
So a couple of Ruby guys I was talking to earlier today who do continuous testing actively when they're pair programming every single day offered a little bit of insight as to, you know, they have kind of the visual red-green notification in Vim. If you've ever watched Gary Bernhardt kind of do his unit testing, he's got this setup where it's really, really fast. He has red-green down at the bottom of his Vim window, and he gets kind of that fast response. What these guys were saying, the Ruby guys were saying, was that they kind of have that too, that red-green response, but they ping-pong, and really he said, one of the guys said, I kind of ignore the whole continuous testing part of it. I know that it's there, and I go and look at it every once in a while, but we kind of just focus on solving the problem. Not exactly too sure how that benefits them, but it was certainly interesting to hear that somebody's using continuous testing. They use it every day when they're pair programming, but they kind of ignore it at the same time.
Does it kind of turn into kind of like background compilation where, you know, you mistype something and, oh, look, there's the squiggly, you know, or something like that? Or maybe it's like ReSharper where suddenly, you know, you type in something and it says, hey, this isn't used anywhere, or, you know, you need to refactor this. Something, a little tickler pops up.
I think that's kind of one of the main objectives behind it. You know, if you've got implemented continuous testing properly, then you shouldn't have to think about running your tests, just in the same way that you shouldn't have to think about building your solution. It's something that should happen. You know, it's like an implementation detail. You know, your role as a developer is to solve a problem, and it could be a very complicated problem. So why are you thinking about all of these things that you have to do in order to operate the machinery? You know, really, you should be thinking about how you can solve the problem and how you can express that solution in a way that makes sense.
I completely agree. And that was really, you know, coming back around to why I wrote Giles, is that I really wanted to have the whole testing side of it, that I have to stop my thinking process about solving the problem and remember, okay, I got to go hit my shortcut keys to run TD.NET to get my test to run. I'm going to wait for the result. Okay, there's benefit in doing that. It kind of taught me TDD and how to really structure tests. And but I want to get to that next stage of writing software where I'm thinking about the test and the implementation all the time, and I'm not worrying about the tooling at all.
Hmm. Yeah, that's not true. We use Visual Studio. We're always worried about the tooling.
No, that's why I'm talking to Vim and Council, man.
We're worried that it's going to screw us over.
We're worried about the tooling. Are we sure the tooling isn't worried about us?
That's right, exactly. Did we get any other abusive questions from Twitter?
Sadly, that was it. Yeah.
What the?
Yeah.
So apparently, I mean, 2 or 3 years before continuous testing catches on in the .NET community, I guess.
You know, it's wild having looked back and seeing that first mentions of continuous testing back in, what, like 2006, 2007, maybe earlier? And then you guys have been doing this for, I don't know, a little while. I mean, I saw something, and I think it was like Visual Studio Magazine, you know, mention, you know, walkthrough, and it was talking about using and Crunch and Giles and a little walkthrough. I mean, what do you think it takes to get this to just be common and everyone doing it?
So I'm glad you brought up the Visual Studio thing. There were two articles in Visual Studio Magazine, one in the online edition and one in the print edition, and written by two different guys. And no, I certainly don't want to disrespect anybody, but the online one, if you go read the online one, it is written much better. It's much shorter. It shows really concise examples of how to do continuous testing. And to me, it was, I read the print version, and it was a shame that the online guy didn't get into that spot, because he really hit it on the head, Ian Davis did, of what, you know, how you really kind of do continuous testing, what it's about, how it shifts your mind. It was a very, very short article, but it really got to the point. But I think it's going to take things like that to where you've got to get out in the publications, you know, really that there aren't that many anymore, prints, magazines and whatnot to really get into, besides, you know, Visual Studio Magazine and Code Magazine. But I don't know. I don't know how it's going to get more penetration in the .NET space.
Well, come on, really. Honestly, it's going to take MS Autotest for Microsoft to, you know, to some sort of auto-testing thing for that. And that's the only way it's going to get traction, which is a sad commentary, but...
They'll go copy nCrunch, and that's MS Autotest, and...
But they'll get it wrong 20 minutes to run the tests.
I think my sales pitch to anybody listening is that this is ridiculously easy to set up. I mean, nCrunch was, I installed it, I opened a project up, and it worked. And I mean, it was, you know, minutes. I actually looked at that article in Visual Studio Magazine online, and it was like, do this, Giles is running, you know, and I mean, ridiculously easy. And the beautiful thing that I saw with it is I've been contributing to these Code52 projects, and I set up an XUnit runner as a post-build step, and, you know, works on my machine, and it screwed up the App Harbor deploy, and it was just, it was a pain. And, you know, instead just having this set up locally, it just worked and it didn't screw with anyone else's. I didn't need any continuous integration permission from anyone. It just automatically worked.
Yeah, I think that's really, you know, where it's at, and it's what really needs to happen. I mean, my own experiences in introducing people to ngCrunch has been, you know, more along the lines that you really need to roll the carpet out for them. You've got to make this really, really easy for people to adopt a tool that can do continuous testing. Because if it's not really easy, you know, if they can't get this thing up and running within 2-3 minutes tops, then they're just not going to do it. And unless they do it, they're never going to see the value that it's really going to give them. And I've always find it very interesting to actually see the sorts of responses, you know, that people give after they try it and it works and they get it and they understand it, you know. And it is really along the lines of, wow, amazing, you know. It's kind of like a massive shift in their mentality at how they look at their tests. And you know when they start saying those sorts of words, you know, that they've got it. You know, they understand now. You know, they're safe. You can leave them and they'll be happy. But actually getting people to take that step, you know, to give it a try, to plug it in and, you know, to just give it a chance, that can be quite hard to do. And certainly, you know, if the tool messes up, you know, if they have a build problem or something partway along the way, it's going to burn them and they might not come back.
Absolutely. And there's another way that it's going to penetrate the community, and that's through word of mouth. And at the conference we were at earlier today and yesterday, Llewellyn Falco was using ngCrunch on all the examples that he was doing. And people were like, hey, what's that tool you're using? Oh, it's ngCrunch. You know, here's kind of what it does. And completely off topic of what he was doing, but people are interested when they see it. And it's written really well, and it looks really nice within Visual Studio, and that attractiveness, I think, is going to help bring continuous testing into the .NET space.
In my experience, you know, I first started doing continuous testing with Statlight doing Silverlight stuff, and it's you see the benefits of it really fast. Like, you really only just have to try it, and it became so immediately apparent how beneficial it is that I think just getting people to, once you get that first step taken, it's a pretty easy sell from that point on. At least for me, it was.
So as far as Giles is concerned, kind of the delivery mechanism for Giles is through NuGet. And I have to give credit to Ian Davis, who put a lot of work into kind of the PowerShell scripting around making it really easy to run Giles from the command line. Because it used to be that you had to pass in your, you know, okay, where's your solution living? Kind of give me a list of where your test assemblies are at a very basic level. So he put the effort in to say, okay, well, we're going to utilize the capabilities of PowerShell to kind of go through and apply some conventions to figure out what your test assemblies might be and whatnot. And there's also a little bit of that built into Giles itself, but making it really, really easy to just say, okay, NuGet, install Giles, go run this PowerShell script, and it starts watching. It's really quick, and I haven't yet seen anybody fail on that. Maybe, and if they do fail, maybe my directions aren't clear enough on the Giles website. You know, the documentation is really, really horrible there. But you know, as it is, I keep going to NuGet.org and looking at the number of downloads for Giles, and it keeps going up. So there must be somebody pretty interested in it and actually using it.
We still need to pimp ourselves. So, Jeff and Ram, do you have any upcoming speaking engagements or releases or feedback or anything that you'd like to talk about right now?
Well, as far as speaking engagements are concerned, I live in New Zealand, so I guess that's probably about the end of that conversation. Other stuff, well, I'm trying to kick out at the moment a release roughly every 5-6 weeks. The last one was quite a big one. The next one will be almost as big. So, you know, if you're not using ngCrunch yet, or you haven't given it a go, or if for whatever reason, you know, perhaps it didn't work for you, do check back again soon, because sort of sometime around the middle of next month, there'll be a lot more to look at.
Yeah, I don't really have any speaking engagements or anything coming up, but as far as Giles is concerned, you know, it's something I'm kind of working on the side of as I get time to do it, and I've got a couple of people helping me out with it, contributing patches and whatnot. So I certainly have accepted a whole slew of pull requests for Giles out on GitHub, and I encourage people to continue looking at it and contributing to it. It will, you know, it will remain open source. I have no intention of changing that. We would love it for it to be a free tool for everybody to use to get them started in continuous testing really easily. But yeah, I mean, it's out there. I would just say that there are other tools out there too. You know, there's like Spec Watcher and the Mighty Moose and Autotest.net stuff. Those are also great tools to look at too. You know, if more people get into whatever tool they use into continuous testing, I think that we're it's going to be hard to tell where we're really going to drive unit testing in the next couple of years. But if people get into continuous testing, there's going to be a lot of great ideas that come out of it, and it could be a light years away from what we have now.
I had two quick questions with that. One being, there are other tools, as you pointed out. Is there a good, do you know of any good kind of comparison or place to find more information about selecting a continuous testing tool, or is it just best to just try a few and see what you like?
Well, I think the problem with any kind of comparisons that you make between these tools is that any comparison that's going to be posted would be out of date probably within a couple of weeks of having been put up there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a new area for .NET, and these tools are maturing so quickly. You know, it would be unfair, really, to compare them publicly in any kind of definite way. But I think, you know, the best thing you can really do in this space is to just literally try them all, you know, find the one that works the best for you. You know, don't get too caught up in how it's being sold to you or what's being promised. You know, pick the tool that solves your problem and solves it in a way that you're comfortable with. And, you know that if you're choosing that tool, then, you know, odds are it'll still be around for a while.
Yeah, I completely agree with Rem. Having a comparison between these tools at this point would be really premature, because they're really all in their infancy. It sounds like nCrunch has been worked on for a long time, and you can see that in the quality of the product. But other things like SpecWatcher and Giles are really relatively new. Ian Davis, in his Visual Studio Magazine article, the online one, he'd kind of compared, you know, well, here's how you do each one, and here's kind of the pros and cons as it stands as of today between a few of the different toolings out there. But this stuff is rapidly changing. So I would say, yeah, completely agree with Rem. Go try them all, see what works best for you. And then make sure that you give the tool developers feedback. Tell them what you like, tell them what you don't like.
So I had one other quick question, which is, I know Giles is up on GitHub. As far as nCrunch, I've seen on the site that it said, you know, free well in beta, and it definitely feels more product-y. I mean, there's a huge amount of work and pain going into the Visual Studio integration, so I wouldn't be surprised if it was kind of gearing up towards a for-sale product. But can you talk about what the model is there, Rem?
Well, I mean, I'm afraid it's not something I can really say much about, and that's not because I don't want to, but because, you know, nothing's actually been decided on that yet. You know, sooner or later, it's a conversation I'm going to have with myself. You know, obviously, there's quite a bit of investment there behind nCrunch. It's been a few years in the making, but, you know, I'm a developer myself, and I understand the importance of having a good tool set as well. So, you know, what I can say is that, you know, nCrunch is still not in a state that I'd actually feel confident selling it to people, and I hope people continue to enjoy using it and sharing their experiences, and know that if it ever does go commercial, that it won't cost the earth.
Well, I think that wraps it up. Join us next time on Hurting Code, when we'll continuously test and talk about other things. I got nothing else. That's it.